B-Pod Studios.
Ready, set, go!
This is Checkpoint XP Daily, your daily dose of esports and video game discussion. A complete look at all things esports and gaming. A production of Beasley Esports XP. Here are your hosts, Nate Bender, Robbie Landis, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan.
Checkpoint reached.
Hey, welcome to Checkpoint XP Daily for Monday, January 28th, 2019, your home for esports and gaming. One of the listeners on 98.5, the Sports Hub of Boston, as well as the Team 980 in Washington, D.C. Coming up today on Checkpoint XP Daily, something weird is happening in an MMO from back in the mid-2000s. Its player base is actually growing. Plus, we'll put our bidding skills to the test with another installment of Name That Price. Those conversations are ahead today on Checkpoint XP Daily. But we start today playing a little bit of catch-up from the weekend. Joining me to help break down this not very important discussion is the Checkpoint XP crew, Robbie Landis.
Moving the payload.
Norris Howard.
Just call me Fuzzy Slipper.
Joe Sloan.
How do I follow that? What?
What?
Fuzzy Slippers? What does that mean?
Don't ask questions.
How can I not?
Don't ask me nothing.
Oh, okay. That's not going to make for a good radio show.
How was your weekend, Norris?
It was great.
Does that have something to do with Fuzzy Slipper?
Nah, it's got a lot to do with Resident Evil.
That's fair. I also got picked up Resident Evil over the weekend.
Is it not the most littest, flyest, terrifying thing out in so many years?
I mean, I don't know how they managed to recapture the fact that, like, even with no longer having the fixed camera angles, why do the controls still feel clunky in just the right way?
It does. That's the thing, in the right way. Like, I feel immobilized and I feel suffocated, but I never feel like the game is actively trying to, like, kill me.
Also,
really, I feel like it's trying to kill me all the time.
No, I mean, like, from a mechanics standpoint.
Yeah, okay. I also played it throughout the weekend with my girlfriend, though. And the thing that I have to say, because I didn't play it, I've just been watching her play. And the thing that I like most about it, having not played Resident Evil 2, is that this game, if it wasn't a remake, would not exist today. Like, a police station with trap doors and, like, hidden medallions and putting... I'm sorry. Who picks up a portable safe and goes, I'm going to take this key off of the keyboard here and put it in there for someone to find later?
It doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make
any
sense.
First of all, it's an old art museum. It's not just a police station.
And what's going to make you mad about that portable safe with the key? That none of that was in the original. That's all new.
They made that up.
It doesn't matter. It still fits in with the fact
it
that...
It does.
Because 100%.
That's something that you would have found, you know, in a game like Forever Go. It didn't need to make any sense.
No,
you're right. Even in the original telling of the game, the Raccoon City Police Department was a remodeled museum, effectively, which is why there is still some artwork pieces and
weird
traps.
Weird stuff.
Weird traps and, you know, trinkets laid around. But we actually streamed that Friday and I think a little bit Saturday. I streamed it twice.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, did that. We had a lot of people, a lot of our regulars join us for that. That was big fun, especially that second night where Mr. X decided to Mario stomp me off a ladder, which, if I'm not mistaken, is clipped over at our Twitch channel, twitch.tv/checkpointxp.
Yeah, Mr. X a little bit more intimidating this time around, isn't he?
Oh, man, he was slapping me everywhere. It was great, man. It was absolutely great. I was having a blast reading Robbie's live tweeting of his girlfriend's reactions to the game.
Yeah, so you haven't been streaming RE2, but Katie's been playing it.
Yep, and you know, she's not big on, you know, being in front of people and stuff like that. So, I just sit next to her and I just live tweet out, like, here's one of my favorites. She goes, I don't want to go in there. She opens the door, the lights turn off, and she goes, nope, not doing that. Turns around, just spends the next 30 minutes just faffing around in, like, the little main area where it's completely safe and nothing's going to hurt her. I'm just like, what are you even doing out here? It's already changed.
I was about to say, that's not going to last.
No, and we're all familiar with, you know, spending a little bit of extra time in the safe room, maybe reorganizing while you rebuild your nerve to venture back out because you just had a scare.
Oh, bro, go back and watch the stream. There are moments where I literally just open the map and I'll just sit there and stare at the screen because I'm like, I need to collect myself.
She feels she has to quad tap everything to make sure it's dead and then complains when she has no bullets.
I was gonna say she's gonna run into ammo problems.
She's about to have a serious problem
all the time.
Yeah,
oh, no.
Yeah, man. But with that said, Joe, I know you doing the whole house thing.
Yeah.
How's that coming?
Well, the move official proper has begun. I actually have a computer set up in my new house now and my PlayStation set up, so I was able to play some Resident Evil on my new TV, which was very nice. I also got to partake in some League of Legends over the weekend, which, does it feel good.
I watched
good.
A lot of LCS, too.
Does it feel good to have NALCS? Like, it's fine to watch LEC when you don't have anything else to watch, but when it's your home region, it's a lot easier to watch. And man, that Alienware deal is working out for Riot, because their new setup, the new graphs and charts that they have up, did you notice like when all the teams have locked in before they go into the game, now it shows like the little production package of the top lane or the jungler facing off with each other.
It's so cool.
It's legit. It's starting to look like television ready.
Yeah.
It's definitely getting there.
Do you think this push to sort of give it this polish came after, like, you know, what OWL showed us could be done with season one?
I feel like Alienware approached them and said, you guys need to step up your game. It could be more than this, right?
You could do better.
I get the feeling.
You're listening to Checkpoint XP Esports and Gaming Radio. I want to thank everyone listening on Nashville Sports Radio, WNSR 560 AM and 95.9 FM, as well as 103.9 in Lexington, Kentucky. We're currently talking about what was going on over the weekend. I've been mostly quiet because I had a very quiet weekend.
Which is different for you.
Was not doing a whole lot. I mean, I streamed a little bit of Fallout 76 on Saturday, and we had a nice big crew for that.
So no dates, no Tinder browsing.
No, nothing like that. It was just very quiet. I had dinner with my parents on Sunday. It was very nice.
I did catch
The tail end of Bill Maher.
Oh God, I'm so sorry.
By the way, totally like when you're expecting Bill Maher, it's sort of like you can brace for it.
Sure.
But when it's just like out of left field, it was just like broadsided with a whole truck of smarm.
Nate, it was out of left field when it happened 2 months ago. This is a whole nother ballgame. Him randomly bringing it up now.
Well, yeah, no.
It's more than just that too, because I mean, I was obviously on the tail end of the government shutdown coming to an end, by the way, making us look like idiots on our national show this week.
Yeah. So anyone who heard the national show any later than Friday,
but with no end in sight,
would have been very confused by statements such as the government is shut down with no end in sight.
Yeah.
And that was quite interesting.
I mean, it still could happen again. So it's not wholly untrue, but
it's not like the problem is resolved. But listen, this rant that Bill Maher went on was one of the most stunningly douchiest things I've ever heard.
And it was timed.
Coming out of a dude like Bill Maher, like
who considers himself like on the cusp of like, you know, the leftist sort of, you know, ideal, right? You know, he seems like a guy, and I watched Bill Maher for a few years before I just got bored.
Everyone
of him.
Did in 2002.
That's right. What I'm saying, before
that's
I got
exactly
bored of
it,
him.
Yeah.
But the thing is that what I didn't understand, and here's something that I just think everybody needs to get out of the habit of, is this sort of culture of dismissing anything that is not what you like. And so social media does nothing but add on to this fire, which is basically like one of two ways. Either people support something to a fanatical amount and it becomes tribalism, or people just discredit it so much to the point that you are supposed to be ostracized for being who you are and liking what you like.
But that has almost nothing to do with what Bill Maher actually said, because if you strip out all of the stuff about comic books, he basically just spent 10 minutes ranting about millennials. And it made him look old, and it made him look like Grandpa Simpson shouting at the cloud.
He's trying to stay relevant. That's literally all I see from
him. How do you stay relevant? But okay.
By trying to tick off.
That's not relevant.
I mean, no, you're right. It's not relevant. But the fact that this happened a few months ago, which was prompted by the death of Stan Lee, that I get. But now it's came back out of nowhere. It's like he was just like, look, we're not in headlines anymore. Let me try and just, you know, tick off the millennials again.
No, but
by
that's what I'm saying. But that's
comics.
But that's the bait, though. You know, we forget.
I said trying.
No, but that's
to
what I'm saying.
Relevant.
But we forget that this guy has a show, and that's what he's there to do. Is he's there to drive numbers and bring people back to watching the show and watching the clips and clicking on their social media and all that stuff. And that's what I'm talking about about the tribalism because people got so incensed about it that they went and they legitimized what he said by essentially make people look like a bunch of crybabies. And I'm not necessarily saying that what he said is true because I disagree with it.
I think we all probably do.
But I think when it comes to stuff like that, how hard is it for people to just be like, wow, that was stupid, and then move on with the rest of their day? How hard is that? Why is that so difficult for us to do?
Because social media is a thing.
I mean, but that, and that's what Norris was saying. Like, in the era of social media, we can't do that
anymore.
Well,
here's the thing. Even if everybody were to do that, when you look at social media, you can grab enough from it to make it look like, hey, you know what? We did make a big deal. We did make a splash.
Well, that's the thing that I'm saying is dumb and is weird and makes millennials do look like a fickle, weird cohort. Every time something like everything is not a hill worth dying on. Bill Maher spending 20 minutes ranting about millennials is not important at all.
People still going to click on it, though.
It's not important. And that's the problem, is that somebody gave importance to it when there was so much other stuff we could be talking about. Is Bill Maher saying comic books is for kids going to make you stop reading comic books?
No.
Then why give it any attention?
I mean, but doesn't it come down to, like, I get what you're saying. On a day where, you know, the government shutdown ended, in a point where our political system is literal insanity.
Right. Why is Bill Maher wasting his time talking about this?
That's what I'm trying to get at. Thank you.
And it's part of our job to comment on the greater culture.
Yeah.
So I don't understand what your point is. Like, why are we talking about this now?
No, I'm not saying why. I'm saying what the public's reaction. Because the public reacted.
Because the public reacts. If the public did nothing, then his entire mission would have failed.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. But why not make that mission fail? Why not make that rhetoric fail by not giving it any credence? Why not?
Because fucking Donald Trump is our president. That's why.
No, and that's part of the issue.
This is the culture of reactionaryism.
And that's the problem. That's what I'm saying.
Okay, are you gonna sit here and hold your breath and turn blue and say it's not fair that life is like that? Or do you just play the fucking game as it's being played?
No, what I say is, wow, that was dumb. And then I get back to worrying about something that's actually important. The Donald Trump, Bill Maher equivalency, that doesn't work, because one is the president of the United States. And when he says something, that takes it into a whole nother realm of impact, a whole nother realm of policy, a whole nother realm.
Well, because I had an entirely different arc of this conversation, and you've just completely taken it in a completely different direction.
Yes, because I said,
so,
why
but like,
react
it's like you're sitting
stupid.
Here incensed that we're sitting here talking about
no,
it.
No, I'm not mad at us. I'm mad at the people who initially reacted to it and wrote think pieces about it when this is a waste. That is a waste.
No, it's not. It's what it is it's Bill Maher clearly going out of his way to show how out of touch he is.
So let him be out of touch in his corner with all the rest of the other old people while we go over here and worry about important stuff.
Because life doesn't work like that.
If you compare the reaction now to when it originally took place, it is actually less. I've seen a single article about it. When it happened last year in November after his passing, it was everywhere.
Well, it was nuclear because he just died.
Yeah, right. Just died. Which is just in poor taste.
So I don't think that it's quite as big as what you're making it out to be. It is going to teeter off and taper out a lot quicker than it did, but people can't just not ignore this. It's not the world we live in. Doesn't matter how much you hate that or not.
Right. I mean, it's like, take it back to something like wrestling. For all the people who detested John Cena for so long, okay, if you truly don't want to see him, you can't boo and do the half and half chant, you know, let's go Cena, Cena sucks. You can't give that reaction if you truly don't want to see him anymore.
Love and hate aren't on the same spectrum. It's about indifference. And what Bill Maher said affected me in no way. In no way. What he said is what he said, and that's out in the public forum, and that's fine. My life and my feelings internally and my need to react to it, I was triggered not one bit. I literally, wow.
Because you didn't sit there and watch both of your parents laugh and nod in agreement. Like, he's nailing it. He's nailing it. He's talking about my kid.
Oh, you're.
And I'm sitting there in the fucking
Bill
room.
Maher fans, huh?
I'm sitting there. They went and saw him live.
Oh.
I was sitting there in the room.
Yeah, but you're that's a difference. You're personally attached to it. I'm personally attached to it from a content perspective.
I don't even I don't like comic books, Norris, but what you're not reading between the lines is how much he was denigrating exactly what we do here on this show and exactly what millennials do culturally.
Yeah, and that's fine.
It's not fine.
He's entitled to that opinion. Does that stop any sort of traction that we're doing? This is different from Donald Trump coming out saying video games are dumb. It's not the same. It is not the same.
No, but when you look at Bill Maher and everything that he represents, the entire arc of his career, he has given voice to the sideshow that is our American politic now. You want to talk about every crazy ass person that has been in American politics in the last 10 years, guess who gave them their first megaphone? It was Bill Maher, either on Real Talk or Politically Incorrect.
Yeah.
Now, the thing that I get incensed about is that Bill Maher hasn't been funny since about 1999. And he became irrelevant to most people in 1999. Why does HBO continually give this guy a voice? I don't understand who listens to him except out of touch baby boomers.
Well, I mean,
well, you just answered the question.
He brings in the ratings.
Because that's
who can afford HBO?
Baby boomers.
Out of touch baby boomers.
Those are the cable package
because your parents were sitting there like, ha ha ha, and laughing at it. That's who he's talking to, and that's how a lot of them feel. And
what you're saying is that the continued infantilization of millennials by baby boomers doesn't bother you?
No, because it was always going to be that way. That's the nature of different generations.
It bothers the shit out of me Gen Xers do it too.
Yeah.
Right,
that is the nature of getting old. That is indicative of getting old. They're going to look old and out of touch, and eventually we will look old and out of touch.
We already do
it. It is the nature of all things.
We already do it with Gen Z and Fortnite.
I will agree with Norris on this one point about this whole issue. There is nothing we can do to change it. And just like people who say esports aren't sports, we don't give any credence to them because it's already proven. Doesn't matter what they think or what they feel.
The money is there.
Happening.
The people want to support it.
And regardless of what the baby boomer generation thinks or spews,
that train has left the station.
When you look at the culture of comic books, there's no stopping it.
The train has left the station.
Absolutely.
Feel raw about it if you want. I don't care. I don't care. Say that millennials are babies. I don't care. I don't. All I care about is, do we go to work every day? Does the baby boomers who have faith in us sign our checks still? Yep, that's cool with me. Let's keep it moving. I'm not worried about Bill Maher over on the side talking about some BS about millennials are babies and comic books are for children and video games are for children. You know what? That's already been disproven. So everything he's saying already is coming out of left field and ain't even supported by fact. So why are we continuing to give energy to something that's not even supported by fact?
Because
that's been a part of the problem.
Because HBO is co-signing it.
Then stop watching HBO. Don't subscribe. Cancel HBO. Vote with your feet. Vote with your dollars.
Yeah, okay.
Don't give it no energy.
We'll see who's not watching HBO when it comes time for Game of Thrones.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying.
But you're giving money to Bill Maher. That's what it is.
I said I'm not angry. Because I said I'm not that angry.
Okay.
I'm not mad about this. If Bill Maher gets a fraction of what I get out of my game, what I give out of my Game of Thrones fund to HBO, that's fine. I don't care. I don't care. I don't know how many times I can repeat it.
You should.
I don't.
You should.
Because what he says doesn't change any of the cultures or the subcultures that I'm a part of. Now, if he was
let's change it. This is how your dad sees you. This is how your dad sees you, your career, your entire pursuit, your creative endeavors.
My dad doesn't sign my checks. Does he?
You don't see the problem.
Does my dad sign my
text? You don't see the problem with the greater cultural war.
No, but if we're talking about something, infantilization, it's about giving a fuck about what your dad thinks. My dad doesn't pay my rent or sign my checks. All I care about, is my dad there? If I need advice, can I go to my dad and say, hey, dad, you know, I'm thinking about doing this and this and this. What do you think? Well, I think it's stupid, son, but if you decide to do that, then whatever. Fine, dad, thanks. Let me not go over there anymore. Easy peasy. I could care less.
Well, I mean, it's like, Nate, you, obviously, your dad has a huge background in radio. He understands a lot of this. My dad has to approach him, I have no idea what it is you do or what you talk about, but it works for you. Go ahead. So, I mean, yeah, he tunes into Bill Maher and he finds it funny. And you know what? Maybe he does think it's for kids.
I just can't laugh anymore at the presupposition that everything you're doing in your professional career is a fucking joke.
Yeah, hey, but think about
think about
how people, our parents and grandparents age felt when they were talking about, you know, especially our grandparents. Why are you sitting around wearing t-shirts and riding motorcycles? That's not doing anything constructive. Hey, why are you putting flowers in your hair and wearing buckskin and fringe and having all this casual sex? That's how they felt about it. It's a generation that is not going to change. It is not. And when we become 40 and 50 and 60 years old, we're going to say the same thing about Gen Z, because that is the nature of getting
34.
Old.
34.
Yeah.
34. But, dude, you don't see me talking shit about like this. Like,
no, you don't. But that's also because you're a different human being and your platform wasn't necessarily built on that. That's what his platform is built off of. So that's what he's going to do in order to keep those ratings coming in.
How can someone with a platform that large be so short-sighted? I mean, that's...
Well, I mean, that ain't...
I mean, again, Bill Maher can't be far from retirement at this point.
Retirement, nothing. His ratings can't be that good.
Well, I mean, they're good enough to stay on HBO.
Right. Good enough to stay on HBO and good enough to keep HBO to still signing his check, period.
But that's what I mean. Like, I think he can look at it from a perspective of... I mean, Bill Maher's what, in his 60s?
Yeah.
Late 50s?
Yeah.
I mean, he can't be too far from hanging it up. I mean, he's about, what, Jon Stewart's age, similar, at least?
Yeah. See, and here's my thing, is that, like, listen, when you know, when you're out of touch, when you feel, when you, because you can feel it.
Yeah, you
like,
know when
I have no doubt that, like, I know when I'm listening to music that I'm too old for.
That is
for.
Beyond.
Right, exactly. I know it. I have a sense of that.
Right.
I don't think Bill Maher does, because he's still trying to have sex with women that are, like, you know, 30 years younger. Than him,
mm-hmm.
But
again, nothing has not,
not
new.
No, not new, not new. But here's the thing: look at someone like Jon Stewart, who, mm-hmm. like, as soon as he felt like it was like the culture was slipping from his understanding,
passed off the torch.
He handed off the torch,
which is the ideal situation. That's the idealized way of how it's supposed to go. I am old and out of touch. I will pass the torch, and when I am needed for guidance and context, I will come back and
when
give
I need
that.
To do a comedy spot with Stephen Colbert,
I will come back and do that.
Yeah.
But that is extracting ego. That is extracting generational differences. That is extracting millions and millions of dollars out of the equation. This ain't happening here, and it won't happen for a lot of people. So I think to be angry at somebody who is so obviously out of touch is a waste of energy, because it's going to happen regardless.
My point is that this is emblematic of how out of touch he is, even politically.
Beautiful. I agree.
I mean, the fact that he is given an iota of credibility anymore is insane to me.
I don't know that he is really anymore. When's the last time you heard someone talk about something he said, like, with any real seriousness?
No, because that's
question.
Because
it's
that's
minute,
because
right?
That's John Oliver's job now.
Yeah,
because John Oliver literally took that job. You're right.
Yeah. That's and John Oliver's better at it, too.
No,
John
he is.
Great at
but
it.
But again, John Oliver is also a millennial, so he's going to speak to our generation in a more... Yes, he is. He's a late Gen Xer.
Yeah, I think he's Gen X.
A late Gen Xer.
But
he's
I mean, like, this bigger conversation that we're having about, you know, generational differences and the generation gap is, I think, going to become a very real conversation socially that we're going to have as things move forward. We're standing in the biggest generation gap that we've seen since the Greatest Generation and the boomers.
Agreed.
Yeah. And
agreed.
I mean, I think it's worth remembering for us, too, as we do this show longer and longer, like, let's remember this conversation when we start talking about what Gen Z is into. Or whatever Seriously. The generation after them is.
Seriously. Because I have no context for Fortnite and Minecraft. I don't want to play those games.
Just real quick point of contention. Is Gen Z and Millennial not the same thing?
No. I think Gen Z is after us.
Is after us, yeah.
Are you sure about that?
Yes.
Isn't Gen Z like
I thought we were called Gen Z for a long time.
Yeah, but they changed that.
Yeah, Gen Z, I'm going to look it up right
Gen
now.
Gen Z is after us.
Gen Z, typically use born mid-90s to early 2000s.
Yeah, we're Gen Y.
We're Gen Y. We were Gen Y because...
What?
Because
that's why they changed us to millennials. Because Generation Y sucks.
Yeah, they changed us to millennials, those who came of age at the new millennium.
Yes, pretty much. So,
But to Joe's point, and just to wrap this up, is I think he's right. Let's rethink about this conversation when... Let's say this show goes on for 5 more years and we re-examine what Gen Z is doing, because they'll be entering the money spending age, not necessarily the money making age.
Right.
But the money spending age is the 18 to 24 age, right?
God, Gen Z is like 20 right now. Or, yeah, geez, Gen Z is like in their early 20s.
Yeah, they're like just entering drinking age.
That's what I'm saying. They're just entering the money spending age. And the markets are going to respond to what Gen Z wants and not necessarily us. So let's examine that, as we move on for the next couple years. And I think it'll reveal itself that, there's a lot of things that we will need to actively reach out and understand about Gen Z in order to properly talk about the culture. But to your point, if you feel that Bill Maher is out of touch, it's because he hasn't been doing enough reaching out to millennials and understanding what their issues are. Bill Maher is a specifically Gen X voice. Specifically. He's always been a Gen X voice. That's what he will always be. So
let's all make a pact right now. Yeah. We're going to be better than Bill Maher.
That shouldn't be
That's
too
the
hard.
Pact.
Hashtag better than Bill Maher.
I like that.
I like that. Yeah.
Hashtag better than BM.
All right. All right, listen, we want to hear from you. How was your weekend? Connect with us on social media. That's Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, and Checkpoint_XP on Instagram. Still ahead on Checkpoint XP Daily, Joe's back with another round of Name That Price. This time, we're looking at third-party accessories. But ahead next, Final Fantasy XI came out in 2002 and was replaced in 2010 by FF14. So why is its player base growing? Stick around. That conversation is ahead next on Checkpoint XP.
This is Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio. This is Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio. CheckpointXP.com.
Hey, welcome back to Checkpoint XP, your home for esports and gaming. I want to thank everyone listening on the sports beat of East Texas 104.3 in Carthage, 103.9 in Marshall, 100.7 in Henderson, as well as 1250 and 94.5 ESPN San Antonio. Checkpoint XP Daily is now a part of the BPod Network at bpodstudios.com. For more great listening options like Inside the Ropes, a weekly look inside wrestling in the WWE, and Talkin' Rock with Meltdown, an interview and music news podcast, go to bpodstudios.com, the place to be for podcast discovery. We here at Checkpoint XP have a special place in our hearts for Final Fantasy XI. It was the game that inspired our first podcast back in 2006, and it was the genesis for what would become Checkpoint.
Yes!
But we said goodbye to it in 2010 along with pretty much everyone else, so why does it seem to be on the rebound?
Yeah, I think the best place to start with this would be maybe to give a little bit of context for FF11 for those who don't know. It was a MMO from Square Enix back in 2002. I think it actually
made it
here in 2003, right?
A big Japanese MMO.
And it predated World of Warcraft.
Yep.
Like, it had a good lead time on World of Warcraft by about a good year and a half here in the States.
It did. And as Robbie was saying, it was a very Japanese MMO.
Yes.
And which is to say, not very World of Warcraft. So if you're thinking, like, your action bar and cooldowns, You got to put that out of your mind.
No,
it was
no,
very
no.
different.
No.
And
not a lot of instant gratification in that game.
No, it was one of the most slow and methodical games that were ever out there.
Right. So this was a game that was built for dial-up modem architecture.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That was also built at a time that used, you know, contemporary references like EverQuest and Dark Age of Camelot to build a lot of its PvE systems. And it indeed, once it really got going in the Treasures of Ot-Urgon expansion,
yeah,
it really started to become one of the most robust MMOs and online worlds out there. But as we had mentioned, in 2010, Final Fantasy XIV came out. There was a mass exodus of players.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Even before then, I mean, leading up to FF14, you could already see players starting to exit in droves.
Yeah. It was basically once FF14 was announced.
Really,
the exodus began.
Right, because, I mean, because it was so dissimilar from World of Warcraft, there wasn't a ton of overlap in interest. There was some. There were some. Like, some people would play both.
I played both of them.
Mm-hmm. But there wasn't a lot of that. It was more sort of like you were in one camp or the other.
Well, exactly.
FF11 was a job, effectively. It was a time sink.
It was. And really, you had to dedicate many, 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 many hours to be able to even get your character to a level where you could do the most interesting content.
Absolutely.
And because of that, you know, it's very weird to see a resurgence in popularity for a game like this, because it you know, like, in a lot of ways, yes, it has kind of expedited many of these things that made it slow, or, you know, made it a slog in the game's early life. But at the same time, we've also seen a private server called Nosomi become extremely popular that rolls a lot of those changes back.
Well, yeah, it's basically effectively locked in 2005. I've been playing on Nosomi server, and the thing is that what 11 has that I think a lot of people are now going back to and wanting to re-experience is that modern MMOs are all built on that World of Warcraft architecture.
Quick gratification.
Everything has become that because it was so successful that became the popular way of making MMOs, in the same way that Ford comes out with the V6.
Right.
And everybody makes their car with a V6 or V12 or whatever.
Right.
The straight six disappears. So the thing is that going back to Final Fantasy XI is starting to reinvigorate sort of a game where you took your time and you weren't rushing into things. And I think that's very, very, very different and refreshing in a time where every game is built for you to get in and do as much stuff, quote unquote, as you can immediately.
Well, especially it's a huge contrast to what we're seeing more and more with the mobile gaming market. I mean, the appeal, and don't get me wrong, it is an appeal of mobile games a lot of the time, is that hey, I've got 5 minutes in between a meeting, I can quickly hop on whatever I happen to be playing, do something very simple, but, you know, progressing,
be doing something,
and then hop back out. FF11 really wasn't that, and there's a myth about how much time it took to do stuff in 11. It did take a lot of time, but
sure,
you could progress if you put some effort into
totally.
It.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things I think people are actually kind of clamoring for. The ones who are returning anyway, is this idea of I have to work to get something out of it.
You're listening to Checkpoint XP Esports and Gaming Radio. I want to thank everyone listening on 101 Sports in St. Louis and WOKR 1310 in Rochester, New York. We're currently talking about Final Fantasy XI and its resurgence in popularity. Now, we all played this game at the height of when it was awesome. Not even going to say at the height of its popularity.
No, the height of when it was awesome.
It
was absolutely a niche MMO to even be playing when it was a current MMO.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I think the resurgence in this is really interesting, and I think that, you know, at least some of this has to be laid at the feet of Ninja, who has a fascination with FF11. I think he was an actual FF11 player when it was current, and he will from time to time take breaks from playing Fortnite and play Final Fantasy XI.
He plays on Nosomi server a lot of times,
right?
So as I've been playing on Nosomi, you see a lot of, you know, new player icons when you log in, because I honestly do think that there's a big ninja effect in getting back into the game.
Well, I think he gave FaceTime to what a lot of people in the MMO genre are feeling right now. You kind of hit it a little bit there, Norris, when you had mentioned, you know, when it comes to FF14 or to World of Warcraft right now, that a lot of it's instant gratification. And I think there's a part of just the gaming community that wants something that's a little bit harder. They want to put more effort into it. It's sort of the same feeling that gamers get out of something like Dark Souls.
Actually, that's a pretty good comparison. That 11 is just the Dark Souls of MMOs.
Well, I mean,
that is not, yeah, that's not unfair.
That's not wholly untrue.
Well, no, because 11, like Dark Souls, you're right. You hit a wall, you struggle against it for a long time, and eventually you power your way through it, and you feel really good about what you've accomplished. And I'm not saying that it's something you can't have in like World of Warcraft. You know, you go into raids, you go into dungeons, and you know it's hard. You mash your face against it, and eventually you win. But what you had with FF11 was everything that you accomplished in it, and I don't just mean clearing your end tier raids, everything that you accomplished in it, you felt really good about it. You could go talk to your friends about it and feel really excited about it at the end of the day.
Yeah, and you know, I was really, you know, hyped once I got into the Nosomi server that, you know, it was gonna be that same feeling of like sluggishness and slogginess, but it didn't. It just reinvigorated me. It made me want to just go out and do stuff. And I loved, you know, not having necessarily a map, not necessarily having some of the things that, you know, modern MMOs have. And that was the brilliance of it. And I felt each and every time I bought some Kesti, the little knuckles, and I was excited to spin the gill on the entry level knuckles. It's crazy.
But does this have the same level of appeal that, you know, a new player would have? Are you only getting nostalgia appeal out of it, or do you think that legitimately a new player who has never played FF11 before would be able to enjoy this experience?
I think it's a little bit of both, personally. See, I think a new player could get into it, especially if they have friends. Probably if they have friends, 100%. But yeah, I think it's something that is a little bit of both.
I mean, that's the question. Is at the end of the day, if no matter how much you enjoyed playing it, do you think a modern player would look at that and not just go ew immediately? I mean, especially like graphically speaking, when you look at something like FF14 on the market, yeah, as a comparison point, I think that'd be a hard thing to get into.
Absolutely. Well, listen, we want to hear from you. Why do you think Final Fantasy XI is experiencing a resurgence in 2019? Connect with us on social media. That's Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, and Checkpoint_XP on Instagram. Coming up next on Checkpoint XP, Joe's back with another round of Name That Price. This time we'll be looking at some third-party merchandise. That's ahead next on Checkpoint XP Daily.
This is Checkpoint XP. Check out the latest esports and gaming news and opinions at CheckpointXP.com. This is Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio. CheckpointXP.com.
Hey, welcome back to Checkpoint XP, your home for esports and gaming. I want to thank everyone listening on the Fanatic in Philadelphia, as well as everyone listening on ESPN Pittsburgh. Make sure you visit our website at Checkpoint XP for our variety of Checkpoint podcasts. We've got the Checkpoint XP podcast, as well as Checkpoint XP Daily, a growing list of game-specific podcasts, like our Overwatch podcast, Low Team Damage, as well as our brand new show for Fallout 76, Checkpoint 76, and our new show about comics and superheroes, The Other Identity. Subscribe and download at our website, CheckpointXP.com. Every so often, we like to play a game called Name That Price. Joe finds weird items for us to bid on, and we have to get as close as we can to the actual retail price without going over. So, Joe, what do we have to bid on today?
So, today, we're taking a look at third-party merchandise. Now, ooh, I know, I always like to throw in a couple of them that were actually first-party. This week, it is strictly third-party merchandise.
So we're talking like Mad Cats, and
there is a Mad Cats item.
Oh, okay. All right. Oh, wow. All right.
Here's our first one. The Lynx 3 mobile wireless controller for Android and Windows. If you struggle to play mobile games on your phone, the Lynx 3 mobile wireless controller is the product for you. All you have to do is insert your phone into the controller and away you go, but only if you can name that price. So Norris, we'll start with you. How much would you bid?
I'm going to say $49.99.
All right, over to Nate.
So let me get this straight. It's a controller. It's a controller.
You dock your phone in the top of it, and then you can control it like a PlayStation controller.
I've seen these.
Does it actually have a controller, or does it use a controller-like thing to move plungers around on your screen?
It looks like a controller to me.
Okay.
It's hard to tell from the picture.
Because that's important.
It is important. I agree.
I'm going to say $60.
Okay.
Ooh, I think you guys are going way too high. $19.99.
Well, Robbie, you would be correct. The Lynx 3 mobile wireless controller is
$33.95. Oh, darn it!
That's what I thought.
Oh, man. See, now, if the thing is that if it uses...
low-balling goof, I can't
stand you. Something like that, no.
If it uses Bluetooth technology, I could see it MSRPing for much higher.
Sure, absolutely.
I would agree with that.
All right, up next, we have the PlaySeat Challenge. Want to take your racing games to the next level? The PlaySeat Challenge may be just what you need. It's a chair with a crossbar over the front that you can mount your steering wheel and brake and gas pedals to. It probably won't help you win any F1 races anytime soon, but it can be yours if you name that price.
Now this is the whole chair with the bar,
It is a chair, and it has built into it like a bar that comes out the bottom that you attach your pedals to, and a bar across top for your steering wheel.
How nice is the chair?
I would say it's pretty nice. It's not the most aesthetically pleasing, but it looks like ergonomic. It looks pretty decent.
It looks like it's not going to break if you really jam those pedals in.
It's definitely metal.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Okay. Fair enough.
All right. We'll start with you this time, Nate.
Okay. Opening bid.
Yep.
I'm going to say $150.
All righty. Over to Robbie.
I was going to say $149.99.
Well, that'd be a terrible bid. Okay. $149.99 it is. I hope you nailed it. And Norris, over to you.
I don't know. $200.
All right. Norris, you would be correct. The PlaySeat Challenge MSRP is for $277.
Oh, my God.
I initially was going to say $299, but I'm glad I scaled it back.
You know, some of those like gaming chairs that exist out there are like $200, $300.
Yeah.
So like, I guess I should have.
That's literally all I thought about.
I
love this next one. The Nyko Hip Clip. If you felt like you weren't getting beaten up enough in middle school, then here comes the Nyko Hip Clip. Why get a clip to attach your Nokia brick to your hip when you can get the Nyko Hip Clip and attach your Game Boy Color to your hip?
Oh, no.
Wow. The year 2000 brought us this waste of time, but it can be yours if you name that price.
Oh, just...
Wow. Robbie, we're starting with you this time.
Just a clip? I'm going to go $25.
All right, $25. Norris, over to you.
$14.99.
Okay, and Nate?
Robbie, what was your bid?
25.
20.
Okay.
I'm going to split the difference.
You have all overbid.
Oh, no.
It's a piece of garbage. It is
$5.99.
And it is priced like a piece of garbage.
Wow.
All right. Up next. Oh, God. Yeah. The Fragmaster. Courtesy of Thrustmaster, yes, that's what their company is called, we have the Fragmaster. This toilet-shaped controller was built with PC shooters in mind.
Did you say...
It's shaped like a toilet.
Toilet-shaped?
Like on purpose?
It's shaped like a toilet.
Wow.
It was built with PC shooters in mind, featuring a joystick with programmable buttons. The problem? A mouse and keyboard was still way better, but it can be yours if you name that price. Norris.
Okay. It's a full-size controller?
It is.
Okay. What was the platform for again?
It's for PC.
Oh, for PC. Okay. I am going to say $40.
$40. All right, Nate, over to you.
$30. That thing's got to be a piece.
Okay.
I'm going to go for what the normal price of controllers usually are nowadays. I'm going to go for $49.99.
All right. Robbie. It was $70.
Wow! Come on!
$40?
The rest is annoying garbage.
It was so hard to find the SRP of this thing. It was a nightmare.
What was the name of that?
The Thrustmaster Fragmaster.
Jeez. Thrustmaster Fragmaster. Ugh. You're listening to Checkpoint XP Esports and Gaming Radio. Shout out to everyone listening on 98.5, the Sports Hub of Boston, as well as the Team 980 in Washington, D.C. We're currently playing a game of Name the that price trying to game, it's a game where we try to guess the price of random different gaming peripherals and assorted accessories. Today, it's all third-party accessories. I think we got time for maybe one, maybe two more.
All right, how about this? The Mad Catz Game Track.
Yes!
The Game Track was set to revolutionize motion controls for gaming. The user would put on a pair of gloves attached to elastic leads that would allow you to simulate playing golf. Unfortunately, it came out in the mid-2000s. You know, when the Wii came out.
No.
No one else bought it, but it can be yours if you name that price. Nate, you are first this time.
$50.
All right, Robbie?
I have no idea which way to go. I'm actually going to go a little bit higher. I'm going to say $70.
Okay. And Norris, over to you.
$1.
Nate, you would be the winner. It was $69.99.
Oh, the one time I didn't go with the 99.
Robbie went over. Yes, the Mad Catz Game Track was $69.99.
Ugh.
Okay. Okay. The Dragon Wii Car Adapter. The Wii sold over 100 million consoles on the success of its price point and motion controls. So if you want to take that on the road, Dragon produced a car adapter for it. That's right, motion controls in a moving car can be yours if you name that price.
I'm going to go
Robbie.
$29.99.
Okay, Norris, over to you.
$50.
$50, okay. Nate, over to you.
$70.
Oh my God, guys, it's a car adapter. Calm down, all over bid. It was $9.99. It's just a little cigarette car adapter, guys. Calm down.
You said motion controls in a car. I'm thinking about something revolutionary.
It made you play your Wii in the car. Anyway, I got one more I want to talk about. We're not going to guess the price on. I'm just going to tell you. The Wu-Tang PlayStation controller.
I remember that.
Who wouldn't want a PlayStation controller in the shape of the Wu-Tang Clan's logo? Anyone who cares about their wrists and hands, that's who. The controller was clearly designed for an aesthetic appeal rather than a functional one. And that thing came with the game for $59.99.
Mm-hmm. Yikes.
With the Wu-Tang Fighting Gang.
Oh my God.
That game was terrible, by the way.
It was based on the Thrill Kill engine.
Yeah, and it was really, really bad.
Yeah,
all right, well, listen, we got to leave it right there. We want to hear from you. Were you able to guess the prices of any of these weird third-party peripherals correctly? Did you own any of these? Connect with us on social media. That's Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, and Checkpoint _XP on Instagram. That's going to do it for Checkpoint XP Daily, the first internationally syndicated show on esports and gaming for radio. Visit our website at checkpointxp.com for insight on esports and gaming, as well as a wide collection of podcasts and interviews. Checkpoint XP Daily will be back tomorrow for the latest in esports and gaming news. Join us Monday through Friday at 5 p.m. at twitch.tv/checkpointxp. Our theme is provided by the band Weird At Last. Find more at weirdatlast.com. Checkpoint XP Daily is a production of Beasley Esports XP. Thanks to our executive producing team of Buzz Knight, Mike Thomas, and Rick Scott. Lead segment producing by Joe Sloan. Producing and booking help from Christine Solis, and of course my co-hosts who pulled double duties as producers for Checkpoint. Robbie Landis, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan. My name's Nate Bender. Keep listening.
You've been listening to Checkpoint XP, a complete look at all things esports and gaming. Check out the latest esports and gaming news and opinions at checkpointxp.com.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.